Welcome. Thank you for making it all the way to the state of Oklahoma for this panel. We appreciate you guys coming out. A couple housekeeping items. The hashtag for this session is Go Army, and that is in the bottom left corner of the slide there. Also, there is not a question mic in this room, so feel free to just to raise your hand. This is a discussion, so if you have a question as we're talking, as the panelists are giving their answers, feel free to stand up and shout it out. My name is Greg Swan. I work at Weber Shandwick on behalf of McCann World Group. It has been my honor to work with the United States Army for the last 6 years, specifically with their recruiting programs and in social media. I lead the digital social mobile team on behalf of McCann World Group. We have a number. We have a couple soldiers here, as well as a civilian who is one of our clients, and I'm going to be introducing them in a minute. First, I wanted to just give a little quick overview of kind of where we're at and why we're here talking about Army and social media. So the U.S. military has been especially proactive in social media, particularly since 2010, when many bans were lifted, specifically the Marines' complete ban on social media. The Army itself has been a pioneer in the area of technology and communications since its inception 236 years ago. But today we're really thinking about a new era in how we connect with one another. It's what the entire South by Southwest Conference has been about. And of course, that goes without saying that the Army would be involved in that, monitoring that, and active in that overall. The Army has more than 2 million friends, fans, and followers online. Raise your hand if you're a friend, fan, or follower of any U.S. Army organization online. Fantastic. Army's active on Twitter, Facebook, Vimeo, Pinterest. Any of you pinners of the Army on Pinterest? Fantastic. And specifically in the last 5 years, the Army has used social media to empower soldiers to tell their stories online. One of the programs we're going to be talking about today is called Army Strong Stories, which is a program that launched a few years ago, allowing any soldier of any background, any rank, to blog about what it's like to be in the Army. These posts are not filtered and moderated before they go live, and they're allowed to say whatever they want as long as it's within operational security guidelines. So that content will say things like, I wish I never joined the Army. My best friend was killed while serving. I miss my wife as our wedding anniversary. Those posts will also say things like, joining the Army was the best thing I ever did. This is why I re-enlisted. This is the money I got for school. I play the tuba in the band, right? By allowing that level of authenticity and transparency, the Army has given credibility to the positive messages that are out there in social media. And it's something I'm personally very passionate about and thrilled to be able to be here at South by Southwest and talk to you guys about. So we have a few soldiers here, as well as our civilian client lead that I'd love to introduce. So you didn't come to hear from me, so let me get to them. Major Ben Grimes is a graduate of West Point. He flew a Black Hawk helicopter for 4 years. Then the Army selected him to attend law school. While in Iraq, he was the senior trial counsel of the multinational Corps Iraq. And Major Grimes was really the driving force to get the JAG Corps online. He is currently the senior defense counsel at Joint Base Lewis-McChord, and he has served in Iraq, Korea, and Germany. That's Major Grimes. Staff Sergeant Levi Peffer, next to Major Grimes, is a drill sergeant in the Army Reserve. Levi spent 4 years in infantry active duty. He spent 2 years as an active duty drill sergeant. He was deployed to Iraq, and Levi has served in our traveling drill sergeant exhibitor program, traveling around the country, talking to young people about what it's like to be in the Army. And then last but not least is Crystal Guerrero, who's the project manager for social and online strategic media outreach for Army Marketing and Research Group. Crystal manages all the aspects of the social media programs for Army recruiting, and she also was an Army brat growing up, so she has decades of experience of actually living in the Army. So getting started, I would love to just ask each panelist just to talk about how you feel that social media has added to your experience as a soldier.
I really got started on social when I deployed to Iraq in 2005. I then very, very unofficially kept a blog of my time in Baghdad. And a critical piece of staying in touch with my friends and family back home. And this was about the time when blogging was starting to get some real interest among our soldier base. And the leadership was kind of uncomfortable with it. So it wasn't too long after I got started that we started to get a lot more regulation being placed on what you do and how you do it and who has to know about it. But for me, social media and blogging in particular was, again, absolutely critical to staying in touch. And that's evolved now over time, both personally and professionally. Obviously, social is the way we communicate, instantly. But it's also been a very useful tool to me professionally to stay in touch with potential recruits to the Judge Advocate General's Corps or doing, even case law research or case research to do background work on witnesses and things like that. So it's grown. It started out as a very core personal communication tool, and it's just grown, just like social has generally. It's just grown over time.
For me, it's similar. I think it's all about the speed of communication. And today, you can't imagine living without it, especially as a soldier. 90% of the time, you're away from home, your original home, where your parents and your family, where you went to high school and stuff. So just keep in touch with them. But then I think back to like 2003, I was in Iraq, and I remember writing back and forth with my mother and her asking like what I needed and stuff. And I told her I needed baby wipes because we didn't have that type of stuff at the time. If anyone's been to the desert, you need baby wipes there. But by the time she got that letter and was able to send baby wipes, it was 3 months later. We already had all that stuff. We had showers by then. We were all set. And I compare that to I went to Uganda in 2008, and then I was able to instantaneously tell her, how the living conditions were, how I was doing. So she had that satisfaction. It wasn't as big of a deal for me because I was a single soldier. But then I started thinking about, like, in 2003, about those, that 18, 19-year-old married young soldier with a wife back home that, she's never had to pay bills by herself, and she had to worry about all those things, and it took her husband, 6 weeks to get back to her about something where now, she can write them on Facebook or whatever, and she gets that instant feedback. And then, we blog on Army Strong Stories, and I really enjoy that because it gives me a way to tell my story, and it lets, my social network know what I'm doing, and it just speeds up the process. I'm not emailing everybody, and I just think that's the biggest thing, is it just speeds up that communication and with back home, and it just increases pride, because I think we all serve for a little bit because we have a lot of pride in what we do. It's not necessarily always for the money and stuff. So people liking your blog posts or telling you that you're doing a good job or giving you a pat on the back, it's always nice to see. So that's big things for me.
So Major Grimes, as far as your work blogging and being active in social media, you've become a bit of a thought leader in the JAG Corps. Can you talk about that?
My work with Army Strong Stories started while I was doing recruiting for the JAG Corps. So I was in a recruiting position for the JAG Corps. And one of the things that I saw coming was kind of the need to get in the loop or on the scene when it came to social. I mean, when I got there, the JAG Corps was still having applicants FedEx their paper applications into our recruiting office, and then we would have stacks of paper that we had to manually file and prepare folders for selection boards to meet, and then we would haul them back and forth up and down the stairs, and they would review the paper. It was crazy. So we had no way to talk to applicants. We had no way to streamline the application process, and that's really how I got started, was streamlining the application process. And that realization then hit me that it's not just receiving paper that we need to be doing. We need to be communicating. It needs to be a two-way street. So now we not only have an online application process for the JAG Corps, we also, the Judge Advocate General for the Army, our three-star general, is on Facebook. And our Sergeant Major is on Facebook. So we're starting to, as a JAG Corps, just a very small piece of the Army, we're starting to get into the mix. But it took some doing. It took, and really, what it took was convincing kind of the mid-level players that social was safe. I think our senior folks, in large part, get it. They see this strategic. You know, we talk about the strategic value of communicating with our audience, and I think our senior folks, by and large, get it. But it's the middle folks who are the gatekeepers to those senior folks who are afraid of making them, you know, allowing them to do something, say something, be associated with something that might fail, or where there might be bad press or, you know, something like that. It's those folks who are more concerned about the boss's image than the boss that I think were the real sticking point in getting at least the JAG Corps moving. I think that's probably indicative of, or not indicative, but kind of, you know, applicable across the Army, where you've got, you know, folks who are more concerned about the boss than the boss is, and it's a matter of convincing those people that this is someplace that has some value, that we need to be engaged with folks. For a number of different reasons.
So that's a great point. So in my experience, every brand is susceptible to risk and anxiety about being in social media. How do you measure it? How do you plan the ROI? But they're thinking about selling soda pop in cars when you think about big brands, right? So Crystal, can you talk a little bit about how operational security works and how it applies specifically to the Army and its social programs?
Operational security is something that is, of course, really important. We want to make sure our soldiers are safe. We want to make sure that the mission is not compromised. But at the same time, it is very important for them to be able to connect with America and share their story. So what we do is we civilians and soldiers alike, we all have a base level of training on operational security, things to avoid, things to be cognizant of. And with that base level of understanding, I mean, these guys are the best in the world at what they do. So we kind of have a level of trust with them to go out there, tell their story while maintaining operational security. And that's kind of the way we look at it.
And have there been people who crossed the line, people who violated operational security, and what happens if and when that happens?
Not very often, actually. At least not since I've been program manager. I haven't seen it too frequently, but normally, I think there was one where we just kind of emailed them and, you know, told them, you know, these are some things that you want to be watching out for, be careful of. Can you please edit out any sensitive information? And with that, he's still able to tell his story. He's still able to go out there. It's just sometimes maybe he was just writing his story in a hurry and, you know, wasn't really thinking about it at the time.
You're right, Greg. We're not selling soda pop, but I think in any big organization, people are generally inclined to be wary of the survival of their brand or survival of whoever it is that's paying the bills for them. For us, it's the survival of the guy next to you, and nobody wants to be responsible. Nobody wants to be responsible for the guy getting next to him getting blown up by the enemy. So, our participants, our soldier social folks, or soldiers who are active on social, are very self-censoring when it comes to security issues. That's been my experience.
Definitely. And actually, on that post I referenced, actually a soldier did say something. You know, it was actually a subordinate to him, sir. You might want to think about that a little bit. And, you know, he agreed. And when he thought about it, he altered it, and we were good to go. But it's catching those things. We monitor for that as well. So, I'll go on daily and kind of skim through and watch out for those kinds of things as well. So it's about all of us kind of being participative, from soldiers to civilians, and kind of policing ourselves where the mission is concerned and where operational security is concerned.
So, Sergeant Pepper, you have the opportunity to work with lots of young people, especially as a drill sergeant. These are people who are used to sharing everything they do, including the fact that they're eating a ham sandwich, right? how do you see, how personally do you feel about operational security, particularly as it impacts youth?
I think going forward, I think Major Grimes actually hit it right on the head. Soldiers are very cognizant of what they do because the guys next to them are why they're there. You know, that's what they're thinking about. I think the real struggle isn't the young soldier making that mistake, because that doesn't happen very often. I think the real struggle is the mid-level leaders at times. General Petraeus was quoted one time saying, you have to see past the maximum effective range of the M16. I think sometimes we all do that. We see our piece of the pie. And, you know, if I'm a company commander, maybe a battalion commander, and all my soldiers are blogging and telling stories, you know, at that low level, there's not a lot of return there. You know, I'm not going to get accolades. My unit's not going to be that much better. It might improve morale, but they might not see the big picture for the Army. But there are very, very real consequences if Private Snuffy tells, you know, that they're on Hilltop 72 or whatever to Facebook. There's a very real consequence, and I think it's not about. I think the soldiers do a good job, but I think the level of trust sometimes, and people thinking because they're young that they can't be trusted with that. But, and you know, people make mistakes, and you know, stuff gets into the media that, you know, doesn't make the Army look good. But having soldiers there to reinforce that that's not what they're doing, and that's, you know, they don't agree with those bad things that are happening, I think overall it helps the Army's image.
Let's talk about access to digital, social, particularly when deployed. So if you could both just talk about when you were deployed, where, and how you stayed connected.
Okay. You went earlier than I did.
All right. Again, I went to Iraq during the initial invasion, and I have a very, it's kind of unique because I went there, and then I went to Uganda in 08, and now after I've been a drill sergeant for 2 years, the young soldiers, I probably have 50 young soldiers that have been to Iraq and Afghanistan, so I see the difference. But, you know, originally when we got there, you know, it was mail, and that was how we connected. It was really difficult to stay connected with families, and again, I can't imagine how hard it was for, you know, the young women who are, you know, pregnant at home, you know, and never been home alone to communicate. And then going forward, how much easier it is now that, you know, everyone knows that the Army has, you know, the Army Facebook page, but a lot of people don't understand that the units as well, you know, at battalion, even company levels, will have family readiness group pages. So even if, you know, a soldier can't get a hold of their, or a husband or wife can't get a hold of their soldier, they can contact the family readiness group page, and I guarantee you that someone from the intelligence area or the battalion commander is monitoring that and can pass that message along. So even if the soldier's not doing the right thing and keeping their family informed with it, which they could now, that those family readiness group pages really help. And I guess that's the biggest thing while deployed, is those family readiness group pages, making keeping everyone educated on what's going on and make sure that they're getting the right information and that they know what's really going on.
And just want to say, from a family perspective, my father was over in Iraq at the same time you were, pretty much, and not hearing from him. I was graduating from UT, actually, hook'em, at the time that he was over there, so he missed my graduation. But while he was there, I didn't hear from him very often, and I remember getting a phone call from him one of the few times he was able to call home, and he was like, oh, you know, there's some things that are happening over here. And I was like, Dad, I don't want to hear about it. Just get home safe and keep me, you know, I just want to make sure, you know, you're good, and I want to hear from you as much as possible. But I realized the restrictions then, and now with the advent of social media and more access, family members at home feel a whole lot better, and I know I would have if I was able to hear from him more. So,
yeah, by the time I went in 05, we had a pretty robust, a early robust network of access between your computer and whatnot in the office. I mean, I was an attorney in Baghdad at the time. So I had access to email and whatnot at work, and then on what downtime we did have, there were some options for cell access or some sort of cellular data access. So I had it pretty good while I was there. Those sorts of opportunities were less frequent the further you got from big installations. I mean, that's that's not going to surprise anybody. But even in 05, things were pretty healthy in terms of the opportunities to connect.
So we're in an era of protracted war where news from abroad or at home spreads quickly through social media as well. And has broad implications on Army recruiting as we think about the next generation of soldiers. And I'd love to just hear your perspective on how you see social media impacting the recruiting from your personal point of view.
I see it, just like the Army has to be, you have to be adaptive on the battlefield. You have to adapt the way you market. You know, you're looking at a young audience. You're not looking, for the retirees or whatever that might not know how to turn on a computer at this time. You know, the market they're looking for they're all on Facebook. And just going back to the same thing, obviously we all know that there's a Go Army Facebook page and all that, but the fact that individual recruiting commands will have, there's an Austin recruiting center somewhere in Austin, I'm sure, and I would guarantee that they have a Facebook page. So when, there's a young guy or gal that wants to ask a question but maybe doesn't want to come into the recruiting station, maybe they think it's a silly question, there's a little bit of, there's a little bit anonymous there so that they can ask that question and maybe get that dialogue started to communicate with them. And also, there's things like, I've had a lot of young individuals comment on my posts on Army Strong Stories where, you're telling a story that you just assume everyone knows, but you don't understand that, for us, it's because it's every day, you don't always understand that those 16, 17-year-old kids, that they have no idea. So there's a big impact by them reading those posts. And I think there's a lot more credibility, with, a kid reading something that I did or that Major Grimes did than reading it on CNN.com that some reporter wrote, because I just don't think there's the level of authority there with knowing what's actually going on. So those are two ways I really see it impacting recruiting.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's about credible communication. I mean, when the Army, and mind you, neither of us are recruiters. So if we're not quite on whatever message the Army thinks they're putting out, that's why. But what I think is it's about credible communication. So if the Army's trying to talk to somebody, and when I was in recruiting for the JAG Corps, if I want to talk to a law student or an attorney who's interested in the Army, I want them to feel like what they're getting is real. They're not just getting the script or the handout or whatever. They're not getting the commercial. They're getting something real. And that's what social is for Army recruiting, I think. I think it's that real communication, that real interaction with a real soldier on the other end who's going to tell you about his crappy day if you ask him about it. And that's the real value. That's the value of social for the Army and Army recruiting in particular, I think.
And I think with social, just as you guys said, it does give that authenticity. And it's also perspective that it's not what you see in the movies. It's not all boots in the ground. I grew up an Army brat, so I was always constantly around soldiers. So I knew there were veterinarians in the Army. I knew that we had doctors in the Army. I knew we had lawyers in the Army. But the general population doesn't think that when they think Army. They just think boots on the ground, those kinds of things. So I think that being able to allow or have soldiers on there actually telling the story, telling what they do as an Army musician or as an Army athlete, those kinds of things, I think it's a really good insight for the general population who may not know anything about the Army at all.
So at a macro level, the Army Recruiting and Research Group has created a couple programs to specifically insert themselves into those conversations. Levi, could you talk a little bit about those? Sorry, Sergeant Pepper.
Trying to be official. One thing that I had a little interaction with was the Inspire Stories program. Basically what the Inspire Stories program does is they find influencers in different communities that are bloggers, and they give them an Army experience, and in turn they hopefully give them a positive experience in the Army, and then they share that story with their audience. I had the opportunity to host Leah Segetti, who's a mommy and fitness blogger at Fort Benning, and we gave her like a little 3-day mini boot camp where she got to interact with soldiers and see, what the everyday life was like. And Leah came in very open-minded, and that really helped us be successful with the activation. But Leah, she was very honest, just like Crystal had said, she had never been around a military town. So all she thought was, she thought she was going to go see Full Metal Jacket. That's, you know, first thing she asked me is like, can I see you yell at him? Can I see you yell at him? And I was like, well, you know, that's not exactly how we do things anymore. It's more about building them up. I mean, we're still very stern, but it's there's the days of the drill sergeant belittling Army soldiers are long gone. It's not how you reach young Americans anymore. But so she got to see that, and she got to see, you know, the fitness program changing and understand how we use nutrition and how we use team building exercises to create a valuable team. And, you know, it changed her perspective. I remember before she left, she said that she said to one of us, I can't remember who it was, but she said, you know, before I came, if my son or daughter came to me and said, I want to join the Army, she's like, I would never supported it. And then she said, but, you know, after meeting these soldiers and seeing how the Army has changed them for the better, she's like, you know, I'd be proud to have my son or daughter wear the uniform. And I think that's huge. So, she, you know, when she goes back and she blogs about that to the mothers that, she, that, you know, she's an influencer to, that's huge because, I mean, it's no secret that if you're trying to recruit a 17-year-old kid, you're not just recruiting him, you're recruiting his parents as well, because or her parents as well. Because, you know, if mom and dad don't support that decision, the chances of that young American, you know, serving are slim to none. So I think there's a huge return on investment for that because, you know, we could have spent millions of dollars pumping into, you know, traditional advertising and trying to reach these moms and dads to tell them that the Army's doing well, but there's not that level of credibility. Again, just like we have credibility to certain audiences, she had credibility to those mothers because, you know, she had nothing to gain, whereas obviously the Army commercials do have something to gain. So I think that it's a great program, and, you know, I hope they keep doing it because I think that the Army got a really good return by her, you know, changing her outlook of the Army, and she still blogs about it, you know, and she still tweets about, you know, her Army experience. I think it's a great thing.
Did you have anything to add? No. So Navy for Moms is another site from, you know, from the Navy perspective of having an online message board where moms can connect with one another. And the Marines also have a site for parents. It's lifeasamarine.com. So we're seeing all the branches thinking about the additional stakeholders that matter, right? You know, I spent a lot of time, you know, in high schools and in activations with teens, but we're, you know, the Army's thinking about who those other stakeholders are. As Crystal said, and someone mentioned on Twitter, the average American has less and less exposure to a soldier, and that's because we've had more than 25 years of volunteer service because of base realignment and closure. There are less Army bases than ever before, particularly above the Smile States. And so social media is a fantastic opportunity to transcend those geographic boundaries and get those messages out overall. Okay. So let's talk about mobile. You know, if you've been here more than 3 hours, someone's handed you a card with a new mobile app. There's a digital back channel going on right now where this conversation's taken on a life of its own and has expanded outside of this room itself.
I don't mean to interrupt. Yeah. Did we open this up for questions? I mean, does everybody know you don't have to wait till?
Yeah. Are the bloggers paid?
Oh, I wish.
No, and again, with Leah that came down, no, they don't pay. I mean, obviously they pay for her travel to come down and stuff, but there's no compensation as far as I know, and you might be able to speak more.
Yeah, per FTC guidelines, we require disclosure of travel. Yeah. You know, they were given money to fly there. But other than that, we've had close to 15 different programs flying the Martha Stewart foodie blogger to Fort Lee for a culinary event, or a Wired blogger from Geek Dad go to Virginia and see the new video game immersion experiences, or video training immersion experiences, and kind of been across the board from there. And, you know, working with Sergeant Peffer to help design the program to truly allow these bloggers to say what it's like, including live tweeting things that they don't agree with or that they see as negative, fully embracing that and giving them the opportunity to say, you know, I saw this and I don't agree with it, and also I saw this and this is freaking awesome and I'm going to tell everybody I know. And again, by allowing that negativity, it just allowing the opportunity for negativity increases what positivity there could be.
And to add to that, I think, again, it adds to the credibility of, you know, if we paid her X amount of dollars and then told her she had to write a blog, you know, it might be successful for time one and time two, but as soon as people find out that you're paying bloggers to, you know, advertise your stuff, I think it loses all that oomph behind it. But giving her that experience and then telling her you can write about whatever you want, but, you know, hoping that, you know, the hope is that if you show them the truth, you know, you want the truth shall set you free type thing. Like, you want to show them what it's really like, and if that's not what America wants their, you know, young daughters and sons to do, then so be it. But, you know, it holds us accountable as well to make sure that, you know, if you entrust us with your sons and daughters, that we're going to take care of them. So I think that paying them would be a terrible idea.
Back row.
How do you use social, if at all, to respond to the soldier over in Afghanistan who wanted to go crazy over the weekend?
I was just going to say, we, from our perspective, especially Echo Army, I can speak to recruiting and things like that, and that's what we would do on our Go Army channels. As far as that's concerned, we have another entity called OCPA, Office of Chief of Public Affairs, and they handle Big Army, so they would probably be using it to put out any news and things like that.
So there were tweets yesterday that said, we don't condone the, you know, what happened and those sorts of things, via Twitter, right? So you have the voice of the Army, the official voice of the Army at the Pentagon communicating to its publics via Twitter.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Vicky with USO. Thank you guys for your service. And I was just wondering what tools you use to really monitor, you know, all these blogs and maybe all the various Facebook pages that come up. Very little Twitter handles that, you know, appear that are somewhat affiliated with cultural stories, be Radiant 6 or anything else.
Currently we use Hootsuite Pro.
And we also, I mean, we use a wide array of vendors and services that I probably won't name via just in a panel. Does that make sense? Front row.
When you were first starting into social media spaces, how did you work with your PAs to show them that the return on giving up control of their messaging was going to get them a positive outcome in the long run? And how did you get that message across to them and convince them of that? Because I'm guessing that's where you got a lot of resistance when I started.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yeah. How much resistance did you get from your public affairs community them losing control of their messaging versus what they would get in the long term for a positive PA?
Well, when I came into my current position, there wasn't too much. It was when the push for social media and actually when the buy-in was actually happening. So we didn't get too much, just really the OPSEC portion was really pushed to make sure that we're not jeopardizing security in any way. Outside of that, our leadership has been very supportive of the programs that we are currently doing.
And I think the answer to those sorts of PA, the public affairs questions, is, hey, these conversations are happening anyway. And if you want to be involved in it, if you want to have good information out, your information out there, you've got to be involved in social. So like it or not, you're going to be. You can do it today, or you can do it next year and be behind the curve. But again, I think enough people saw the writing on the wall that we're on Pinterest. I mean, who else is, what other government agency is on Pinterest today? You know, the writing's on the wall, and we're trying to jump in now. Again, we're not spokespeople. I'm not. We're trying to jump in where we think the conversations and the interaction's going to take place. And if that means we're in a half dozen different spaces, that's what it means, because you're in a half dozen different spaces.
And to your point, someone's out there telling the story, so right. You can either get in there and talk about it with them, discuss it, or you can just back away. And I don't think the second option is an option anymore.
Yeah, so, specifically, I believe there was, you know, there's official guidance that came out from the DOD, there was official guidance that came out from the Army, and then within the command's leadership, a memo went out to commanders and PAOs from there, as far as I know. So, you know, it's of course, there's always that top-down communication, and then there's the people who get it immediately, the people who are already headed that way, and the people who are laggards, just like any other organization. I think there was a question in the back. Yeah.
Can you tell us the balance between positive stories and negative stories, like how it breaks down? And also, when you have to choose which stories you're going to promote, like on your website or on the page or in other ways, how do you decide what stories, and again, how many positive, how many negative do you tend to promote?
Oh.
I can take it.
It just depends on what we get, really. It's generally speaking, everything is out there as far as Armstrong Stories is concerned. We let the soldiers tell the story on their own.
So I'd say that the stories are overwhelmingly positive, and I think as both Major Grimes and Sergeant Pfeffer said, there's personal accountability. So it's your name. This is not a site where you just use your own. You make up your own name. It's tied to you, and there are consequences to what you say as well. So there's surely is self-censorship, although the Army isn't specifically doing the censorship. The posts are pulled straight into GoArmy.com, which is the Army recruiting homepage. They're pulled every night, and they're not edited. So there could definitely be negative posts on the homepage at any given time. And, you know, personally, I've never worked with a brand that would allow any employee of their company to write, "I hate working here," and put that on the homepage.
Very true.
Yeah, in the very back.
Thank you both very much for your service. I guess I have two other questions. First of all, deployed troops used to pretty much be the information bubble. Even back in, I guess, 2003 and 2004, that's really changed. You talked a little bit about how it's changed in terms of you all communicating out. Can you talk a little bit about how it's different in terms of, you know, there's an operation, there are internet pundits talking about that same day, or maybe even writing on your Facebook wall or tweeting at you or something like that. Can you talk about how that sort of changed for the average deployed service member? And second, really quick question, I'm sure Army's doing the best, but all of you Army, who else is doing a really good job anyway? Thank you.
Your first question, I think it has changed the dynamic a lot. Because before, you know, information would get put out, you know, by, you know, media, and then the Army would have to react to it. I heard a story about there was the 82nd Airborne Division was on a mission, and they bombed the village, and the Taliban had released an article through some source at trying to say that they were killing civilians. But now, because there's that accountability, most large operations are recorded at some level. So what the Joint Task Force did was they went on YouTube and they posted the video. So, you know, it showed that wasn't what was going on. And, you know, where if you didn't have that option, it could have snowballed into a pretty big story before, you know, then you have, you know, some general on TV trying to say it wasn't true. And then, you know, is America believing them? Are they not believing them? But now, you know, the proof is in the pudding, so to speak, with that. As far as the other services, I'm not 100% sure. That might be better for you. Oh, you know?
Okay. Well, I think the Marines must be doing a good job because there are a few of them here.
Yeah.
So.
Nice.
That's good. In the front.
How have you facilitated education since launching the Army School site? Like, if there are any soldiers or anyone involved with the Army who wanted
to participate or wasn't sure how or didn't know how to use Twitter or wasn't on Facebook yet, like how have you educated those people to help them and give them the tools they need to share their story?
Well, I think
everywhere we tell soldiers about it, and if they have any questions, our agency staff is always, or even myself or any of the Army people, will, you know, kind of give them a rundown on what it is, and there are online tools and things like that that they could use to find out how to blog. It's pretty self-explanatory though once they get on there. But for our part, we do educate our recruiters as well on how to use it, how to blog from Army Strong Stories, give them a rundown on any tips on Facebook, things of that nature. So there is some education. It's not as streamlined as I'd probably like it to be, and it's not something that's standardized yet. So.
Yes.
First of all, I'm retired. Very much involved in the training aspect. There are a lot of things I've been competing for so much time. You never think that we'll cross the line with the social media and training. And how do you, we tell them, they're in the blog, but we can't get them to do an online course.
The Army's actually going to that. They've shifted to structured self-development, where they are going online and doing those structured courses. In the training environment, not necessarily for them to give information or for them to do their self-development, but one thing Fort Benning does a really good job at is keeping their families informed while they're in training. One thing they'll do is parents are they want to be hands-on and know what their soldiers are doing in the basic training environment. So Fort Benning they'll have quizzes every day. So, all the parents are following the Fort Benning Facebook page, and they'll ask, who Audie Murphy was or stuff like that. So now the parents are all, they're on Google trying to figure out all these Army things, and it helps educate them. And then, if they're the first one to answer it, the PAO will go down to that company and take pictures and then post it. So now this mother has learned something about what her son's doing and then, got a reward for it. As far as in a self-development area, I don't 100% know if I could answer that question. We're online. I just finished a course, and there was a lot of online work with the modules and stuff, but I don't know how it's... You always have to worry about that sensitive information, because a lot of what you learn is sensitive. So, having the training actually as part of social media would be difficult. But some of the stuff that is generic, like I know what I used to do before I would give a class is there's a lot of apps that you can get on your mobile phone. So I might re-look over how to call for fire or how to do this or that, so that when I can give the class, I'm 100% sure I know what's going on. So, there's tools out there that can help you with self-development. I don't know if there's works of, the Army having an official, applications to help with self-development or not, though.
But that bleeds in. The training piece also bleeds into collaboration and the social model for collaboration. I mean, because, when we talk about knowledge management, to do it right, you've got to have the communication, the collaboration going. There is a secure platform for internal social collaboration behind the firewall. And I don't know if you've heard about MilSuite. I think it's great. And if you're not on MilBook, or if you are on MilBook, look me up. If you're not, get there. But I think that sort of social model of collaboration and information sharing. It's kind of the same thing that we're doing in our personal lives, right? We talk, is this restaurant good? Is that movie any good? What'd you do last week? That sort of social interaction geared towards the professional development and getting the mission done, we need to have a place to do that behind the firewall. I think we're developing it. And like I said, MilSuite's a great platform for that. And the only drawback right now being user base. And I think if once social catches on as a way of life in the military, then I think we're going to start to see some very dramatic changes in both how we get things done and the efficacy with which we get things done.
Yes?
Hi, how are you? I'm a member of Deloitte in D.C. I have kind of two quick questions. One is, can you address what the status of the actual Army program is that it's remain, and when it may be open to the broader South Valley kind of community in order to develop mission critical applications? And the second question, I was at a moral psychology panel yesterday at random, and it was talking about how the Army used to recruit really on the adventure, pay, and travel, and recently, a few years ago, realized that over military values, honor, integrity, and aggression better curriculum, with social media, a better avenue to translate those core values that are saying travel patterns for the sake of AI.
I think that the our soldiers telling the story, in their stories, you can see the values that they all share. It's kind of like a unified theme. When you go scrolling through Army Strong stories, you'll see leadership, duty, selfless service, all of those things. And I think people can really relate to that and connect with that. And I think that's something that one of the reasons why Army Strong Stories has been so successful. So I think that is definitely very, very important.
Yeah, it may seem like the Marines have got a monopoly on using honor as a recruiting tool, but they don't. They do a very good job of it and have forever. But part of that authentic communication is exposing, you know, getting into social exposes the Army's really authentic belief in those same principles, same ideals.
As far as the Apps for Army program, none of us are able to speak to that here. Any questions? Yeah.
Kind of from a public relations perspective, social media is symmetrical as opposed to asymmetrical, which the military has historically been, and kind of public information model, just the facts, ma'am. What are some other ways that the U.S. Army is being symmetrical in its approaches outside of social media to meet people one-on-one and kind of tell the story of the Army?
I think we do a lot of that in our outreach programs. Our traveling drill sergeants that go out, we have our motorsports activations that have panels of drivers, a soldier, that talk to kids and speak to them on an authentic level, answer their questions and things of that nature. It's within something that they like already, probably, but it also gives them the opportunity to interact one-on-one with the soldier. And in the Army Strong Zone, it's an interactive area that we have that where you can kind of hold, you know, tangible Army equipment and, you know, talk to soldiers one-on-one and see some of the new technology that we have, robotics, things of that nature. So I think it kind of gives them a window into what Army is really about.
I think also just like allowing soldiers to give interviews, you know, you always think of, you know, back in the old days, if a reporter came, you always hear, you know, some of the older folks in the military talking about, you know, you turn and walk the other way because only bad things could happen. I think the Army's done a really good job at trying to turn that perception around that, you know, if you educate soldiers and you treat soldiers right, that they're gonna give a message that's powerful and is true and positive. You know, and if you're just trying to censor them, you know, I think that can really give a bad image of trying to, you know, if I'm a reporter and I walk up to a soldier and I see his supervisor telling him to get away from me, you know, it's going to plant a little nugget in my head. And, you know, the next time I do write something about the Army, it might be not quite as sweet and sound as if I was able to talk to that soldier and hear his honest opinion about subjects.
And it is that insight. I mean, growing up as an Army brat, we all had it. So pretty much I think over half of the people that I went to school with as a kid overseas, they went into the Army or some uniform service. It's just because, you know, you don't fear something or kind of shy away from something that you know about. And, you know, the more information that you have on it, the more amenable you are to it as a career choice.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to what kind of engagement you've seen off of advertising on Facebook specifically, because I've seen a couple of the big campaigns on the front homepage of Facebook for the Army, and I'm wondering, like, how much engagement you've gotten off of the paid campaigns versus organic growth, like referral of a friend on Facebook, or, you know, sharing an Army link or something like that. Have you tracked that at all for, like, insights or anything like that?
So, definitely, of course, you know, our stakeholders are on Facebook, because no one in this room isn't on Facebook, and you are all Army stakeholders. Facebook currently does not accept a specific FAR clause, which is a contractual clause for the government to spend large amounts of money with them. The things that you're seeing on Facebook are largely either small local programs or kind of more like partnerships that don't require dollar amounts. If that's going to change, it will surely change. But I would say to date, I believe that the majority of growth on Facebook has been driven organically. Yeah?
So along with that, with your goals in doing this program, have they been met?
Absolutely. So in 2006, the Army, did research to look into what's being said about Army Online, where that conversation's happening, and what they're talking about. What they found is that, by and large, the Army, there was a lot of conversation happening, but the Army was not involved. And that's because there was a policy that said soldiers could not be involved. To date, we have more than 800 soldiers writing about what it's like to be online, or to be in the Army. Those stories are shared through multiple social channels and will continue to be in the future. We absolutely have met our goals of inserting the Army into the conversation. Our goals were not to achieve a certain number of likes or to drive a specific metric. Okay. Yeah?
Can you speak a little to what resources or training you provide specifically around use of social media, both for the Army stories, but also for personal news?
Every 6 months, this is what I'm tracking anyways, there's a requirement, I think, that just like a one-hour block of instruction that every soldier will get, just educating them on operational security and social media guidelines. And the Army's also done a good job. I think 2010 was the first time where there's actually a social media guideline manual that was put out by the Chief of Public Affairs that, you know, it's a good, the average soldier's not out reading it, but it's a good tool for commanders to understand what the official guidance is. So when they do give that training, they're not just, you know, given what their opinion is, which I think is what happened, you know, 2005 maybe, you know, the coming commander might be, okay, here's your operational security briefing, don't talk to media. Where now they have that, there's that doctrinal manual where there's actual guidance where, you know, he or she can go and look at that and actually give the correct information about what the Army wants to do and what the Army's goals are.
Right. I mean, because it's less about training specifically for social, and for us it's much more about training the concept of security. Because, you know, whether it's on the telephone or in person with their buddies at the bar, the interest is the same, and that's security. So social is just another way to talk to your buddy. So there really isn't a whole lot of guidance about, you know, this is what you can and can't do and how to use Twitter, Facebook, whatever. But it's all about security.
There's just a lot of general guidelines, right. And you have to be able to apply those guidelines because, in all honesty, as a soldier, especially in today's day and age with everything being so technology-based, there's a lot of other things that you need to be trained on. If we had to give, you know, 6 hours of training every week on how to correctly post on Facebook and stuff like that, you would never learn how to shoot your rifle. So, you know, you have to give them those guidelines, and, you know, we trust them with rifles and hand grenades, so I think you should be able to trust them using Facebook.
Yeah.
What metrics do you use to gauge success and failure?
I would say just success is just having our soldiers out there telling their story. I think that's a huge success. Interaction, of course, you want people interacting with your posts and that things of that nature, but for me, as far as I'm concerned, just having our soldiers out there telling that authentic story, I think that is success. And the more soldiers that we have out there telling their story, I count those as successes.
We have year-over-year goals that we're not able to share here, but we do count everything and map everything and project everything. Everything. All the things. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, I had a different question, but now this question prompted anyway. So do you try to map this back to leads? Or do you consider this more of an awareness vehicle? Or awareness
I consider it more awareness than anything.
And the second part of that is, can you give us a little bit of insight into what's next for Army Challenge Series? Like, are you going to continue to grow it and iterate it?
Sure. So a lot of the social programs are, we see them as awareness, of course. Leads are driven through GoArmy.com. So a lot of these programs directly drive to GoArmy.com. So if you think of the dreaded funnel, right? And so, you know, they're definitely within the awareness stage, but that's GoArmy.com is our primary kind of macro level until you get at the local level. And then what was your second? What's next? Do you guys want to talk about?
Well, we've got a new iPhone app. Well, new as of last year. We've got an iPhone app. We've got the mobile site. I understand we're going to have an Android app coming out soon. Nobody will give me the webOS app I think we need. So in terms of Army Strong Stories, that I think is where what we're doing next is continuing to give soldiers tools that they can use to post mobile. So
GoArmy has a mobile site as well, and you know we're thinking mobile, right? In particular, you know, if you think about like the Haiti humanitarian rescue mission, media like legacy media wasn't even able to get into Haiti, right? Geraldo Rivera couldn't get a tent, but we had Army Reserve soldiers on the ground there and thinking about how they can share their stories directly to both the media and to the public. As well as the parents and the prospective soldiers as well. So definitely thinking mobile. I haven't put this side.
I'm curious about tracking the readership. And you know, obviously family and friends are going to just fantastic at that connection, but part of the people you don't want reading and understanding what you're thinking, what you're worried about, also your mobile is there together.
We monitor, like you said, everything, but... I haven't seen any particular trends in either direction.
So we haven't done any formal surveying tools on the site. Yeah, so up in the back.
How do you deal with negative comments and negative publicity? And when it does start to spiral down, at what point do you start to shift your messaging or change things or optimize it based on the feedback of, let's say, negative comments from civilians?
So, Major Grimes, you get more comments than majority of the soldiers we have on the site. Do you ever have any negative comments?
I'm trying to think. Not really. I mean, for whatever reason, our readership is by and large supportive, which is not this. And mind you, I've written not entirely positive stuff from my perspective. But the comments and the interaction, the conversation that takes place is generally positive or at least civil. We had a lot of discussion about the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And that was kind of the biggest the biggest kind of publicity eggshell that we dealt with on Army Strong Stories. And we had bloggers on both sides of the issue kind of write back and forth and comment on each other's stuff. And we had, obviously, readers as well who were commenting. But I don't recall, and I was pretty involved in that, but I don't recall any uncivil discourse or any... I mean, there were lots of disagreements, but not uncivil discourse. And so I don't know. We just haven't had to deal with it.
And as far as on Facebook, I think most of our community is really self-policing, actually. So if you do have a negative comment that comes up, usually it's a moderator won't even really have to say anything because there will be other soldiers to say, well, hey, that's not correct, or you know, they kind of serve as a sounding board of sorts. And you know, when someone puts something out there, you know, it's quickly confronted either way. Like you said, it's always civil, but they're quick to correct any misinformation.
Army has a policy of allowing kind of dialogue to happen as long as it's not attackful, libelous, and that includes negative comments as well. All right, we have time for one more right there in the back.
Thank you. the immediacy of social media and how fast events happen. Going back to, for instance, the one this weekend, someone went off base, did some stuff he wasn't supposed to do. And the fact that public affairs guidance really seems to have to go to the commanders to be passed to the troops at later dates. How do you keep misinformation from going off in all different directions? How do you keep the Army story going down the straight and narrow without breaching the guidelines you set for yourself by not wanting to censor?
I think that it comes down to the self-censorship of individual soldiers who are wary of speaking out of turn or saying things that are going to endanger their peers.
Well, would it be, necessarily making comments on different events that happen, even stuff not related to the combat zone? Wouldn't the concern be more of keeping the story together? Like, even if it's, like I said, not combat related, they don't have to worry about their brothers and sisters in arms getting put in a dangerous situation.
Right.
What sort of system are you using to keep the command message the same?
Well, we're not. Largely because the goal is not to be another public affairs outlet. I mean, the goal is to have a conversation, not to be a public affairs outlet. So there's going to be some haze in the conversation. You're going to have some misinformation in terms of the comments and the conversation that takes place because we're not the spokesman for the command, and the soldier's not the spokesman for the command. So you're going to get that confusion in the conversation. It's going to be built in. It has to be. If the conversation is going to be real, I mean, it has to be. You have to expect it.
They may not be the official spokesperson, but the Army's clearly backing what they're saying and giving them the opportunity to put it out there under the official Army logo. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, aren't there concerns for someone going high into the right with any situation?
Absolutely. Which is why. It's taken the military so long to get where we are, and why it's so important for us to keep moving in that direction, because we're now on the right path in terms of empowering our soldiers to talk to America, right? We're in an age where we're so disconnected from everybody sitting here, because, I mean, how many of you know a soldier in your immediate family, right? Like 10% of the room? 15-20%, maybe 20% of the room? I mean, soldiers are disconnected from our society today. And that's through nobody's fault, and it's not an evil, bad. I mean, it's not a thing that you judge. It's just a fact. But that's why, again, it's so important to empower the soldier to have the conversation, even if it includes wrong information. Because having the conversation and engaging with the public is so important.
So thank you guys so much for coming. I'm getting the "you must stop." So they're going to be around afterwards. And again, if you want to follow up on all the tweets from today, it's at Go Army. And please use the app to rate this session. They do look at those and let us know what you thought. Thanks a lot.